Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. It is now time for Inside Matters, spiritual talk, healing done right, spiritual growth, 12-step indigo meditation, and much, much more.
Good evening, everyone. Thought I'd jump right in here. Oh, wow, it's such a beautiful day out here in Blog Talk Radio land, and I'm feeling real sprightly. We have a lot to talk about today, but I think one of the things we're going to need to do is do our disclaimer, because this show is going to be really, really, really informative. But it's a shaman's opinion, and it gives shamanic advice. And it doesn't necessarily mean that we're acting as physicians and so on and so forth and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So before we start our question and answer aspect or part of the show, let's see. Let's do some little chit-chat on a personal level. On the first Sunday of September, I won't be doing a show because I'll be vacationing in the mountains. I'm going to a women's retreat, and I'm looking really forward to going to that retreat because this will be a first time in a long time where I can embrace wholeheartedly every aspect of who I am, whether it's my ethnicity, whether it's my my gender, whether it's my religious background, the fact that I'm clean and sober. I will even be able to embrace the fact that I have some breathing issues sometimes when I'm around women with their perfumes and their scents, because not only is this a clean and sober event, they have asked all females to leave all of their perfumey products on, because this is also a scent, S-C-E-N-T, free environment for those women who may suffer from COPD and asthma and be allergic to women who wear their colognes and perfumes and their no scented lotions, nothing scented. They want you to become clean and unscented. So that's going to be a blessing for a lot of women. One of the things that I'm excited about is the fact that I hung out with my 13-year-old granddaughter last week, and she's biracial, and I took her for her first silk press appointment, and she's really happy with it. No chemicals in her hair. Let her sit down, and she has her own hair technician that I introduced her to. And so this is Shell Dees's salon in Herndon, where I took her, and all the sisters in there, all they do is do natural hair and wigs and different styles. And that's where I go get my locks done. And my granddaughter was really happy with that, and I love it. I also went to see the new Spike Lee joint, the movie Black Klansman. Now, I have to say that it is a good movie, but I didn't stay for the whole movie because certain aspects of it just tended to be, you know, real annoying to me. I don't get off on the N-word being said over and over again. I don't get off on watching white people try to do in black people. It just gets to me. It plays on my empathic nerves, and so I had to leave the movie. I did look up on YouTube to find out how it ended, and so I won't do any spoiler alerts, but it ends very well. It's a good movie, but Spike Lee is something that I would prefer to watch at home and not in mixed company. As a matter of fact, I was only black one in the audience, and it was just annoying watching this stuff on the screen with me being there. And so I got up just, I guess 35 minutes before the movie ended, I got up and I just left because I just didn't want to be in mixed company. I don't like watching stuff like that in mixed company with, you know, other races. So it's just offensive to me. So I got up and I left. I'm not saying the movie's not good. Everyone says the movie is phenomenal, but that's, you know, what I'm letting you all know, that everyone else says it's good all the way to the end. I just did not share in participating in watching it all the way to the end. I am going to go see that Asian movie, Crazy Rich Asians. I'm going to go see that because I remember 25 years ago when I watched the movie The Joy Luck Club. That movie was really good. It was an all-Asian cast, and it's my understanding that that was the first and last time there was a movie with an all-Asian cast. It was a very serious movie, and I loved it to no end, and the ending was really beautiful. So I am going to go and have some fun watching the movie Crazy Rich Asians, and I definitely want to see the movie Alpha because it's just something that I want to see. Okay, what am I talking about? What am I doing here? I'm just hanging out for a little while, waiting for the lights to pop up and pop on, and we want to get in tone with Jose Stevens. You know, we do Lena Stevens's Power Path Energy Report for the month. Well, Jose Stevens is her husband. And Jose Stevens is, he has a question and answer page on their website that I'm going to entertain doing tonight. And there are a lot of questions about different aspects of our lives that Jose, as a shaman, has answered based upon a shamanic view. But before we do that, and I hope I remember to do it after, just before we close, we must do our disclosure on this one because we need to inform everyone that the information we share here will never be offered as medical advice and should not be considered medical advice or treatment, nor religious doctrine, and is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional. Always seek the advice of a physician or other qualified healthcare professional regarding any mental or physical health conditions or treatment. Now, we're going to be talking about things such as what's the shamanic view about when an essence enters into a newborn or the fetus. We're going to be talking about things that have to do with world affairs and how we can overcome some of the trauma that we're feeling as we move through the process of Mother Earth and the changes affecting Mother Earth. So because we're going to be delving into those types of things, we definitely need to let everyone know that these are not necessarily the opinions of Duchess. I'm recapping Jose Stevens's question and answer section from the PowerPath website, and we've gotten permission on file to be able to convey some of these topics from PowerPath. Now, Jose is an international lecturer, corporate team builder, and occasional coach. He's a consultant and trainer, a psychologist, licensed clinical social worker, and author of more than 20 books and numerous articles. He is also co-editor for the Journal of Shamanic Practitioners and a board member. He is the founder, with his wife, Lena, of the PowerPath School of Shamanism and the Center for Shamanic Education and Exchange. It's a nonprofit organization dedicated to educating youth in indigenous cultures. He has completed a 10-year apprenticeship with the Haiku Maricame in Mexico and has studied with the Shipibos of the Amazon and the Pacos of the Andes for the last 30 years. So this gives him the credentials to respond to the questions that I'm going to convey to y'all tonight. So let's get started. Let's start with the first question. Let me clear my throat a bit. Wet my whistle. If the next 8 to 10 years are going to be highly chaotic and the process of reinventing the new earth would take 300 years to complete, then for us so-called light workers who are middle-aged and older, what is there to do in the meantime so we can actually enjoy some light and prosperity? This questioner wants to know that they have manifested an abundance in the midst of chaos, but they are not sure how to do that given the state of affairs. Okay. His answer is very, very short and to the point. He says, live your life as if it is 300 years from now. How would you live your life then? Why wait? What do you want this world to look like 300 years from now? What do you want to be experiencing? And why wait to be a loving and generous person? Why wait to bless people every day? Why wait to be overflowing with gratitude? So what are we waiting for? You know, the world is going to be what the world is. And we who are human beings living on the face of this earth, we need to take stock with who we are and how we want to be as our best and authentic selves. Here's another question. It's almost the same. Some of us baby boomers are facing the winding down of our careers in this decade and wondering what we will do with the rest of our lives. Perhaps we're grandparents and think that this is an opportunity to do better with the grandkids. Okay? And maybe we feel we can do better with the grandkids than we did with our own kids. Perhaps we think we might work for social justice. Then there's the issue of where will we live, and on and on and on and on. Okay, Jose says that this is a good question, and there are several considerations to discuss. First, in this dynamic time of phenomenal change, most people don't know what the next week will bring, much less the next 5 years. In some ways, planning is not so viable, as you will probably change a great deal by the time you retire, and you may decide to do something entirely different. The world is going to be a different place with new potentials and possibilities. There may be restrictions as well as, depending on world conditions, resources, energy needs, and transportation. Your best bet is to put your energy into revitalizing your health and divesting yourself of unnecessary baggage, including material possessions, psychological attachments, addictions, and negative habits. And this way, you will be happy and ready to do whatever essence dictates is best for you to do at that time. When the time comes, it will be best to do what your heart wishes rather than what your head says you ought to do. Okay? So, a lot of people who are healers out there want to know, is being a healer the ultimate profession? You know, because we all come with our special gifts. Some of us know what those gifts are, and some of us are still in the process of learning them. But is being a healer the ultimate profession? Jose says that that's quite a complex and confusing question. Did I sound like that's the way it was feeling to me as well? One answer may come as a surprise to many older souls, and that answer is no. A lot of what passes as healing is actually meddling and diddling. The vast majority of healers are trying to heal themselves by trying to fix others, a complete waste of time and effort. First of all, when we presume to fix another, we assume that we know what is best for them, and we often don't. Considering that in our dream of reality, others are projections of ourselves, there is actually nothing wrong out there. Remember, we create our own reality, and all aspects outside of ourselves are projections of ourself, inwardly, outwardly. The distortion is within. If we fail to recognize that, all we are doing is diddling around. Okay? So does this mean that we should abandon our roles and professions as healers? Well, a lot of people should, because they do more harm than good. Their intentions are too full of ego, too full of pride, too full of righteousness. You know, we have those holier-than-thou righteous people that think they know what's best for everybody else. Now, for many, healing has become a means of social status, a way to acquire fortune or fame, a way to feel good while doing little good. Now, this may sound a little harsh, but it does need to be said. Many scientific studies have demonstrated that just leaving people alone is sometimes better than all the treatments and tests we give them. That is why the wealthy are in worse health than many poor people who cannot afford health care. It is and has been shown that the more health care people have access to, the worse shape they are in. I have to smile at that. Because I go to so many healthcare professionals, I even told my physical therapist, I am so tired of seeing y'all's faces twice a week. It's like really just getting on my nerves. And, of course, if this is getting on my nerves, what is that doing to me emotionally and me inwardly? It's like, oh, I got to go there again today. I'm not really happy. I'm not even looking forward to it. So Jose is saying that the greatest healers are actually those who have let go of the idea that they are doing anything. They are, however, excellent at creating space. They are good at giving permission to heal. They know that people in situations heal themselves. Fixing usually just makes it worse. That is why politics and social programs are so dismal. But creating the space for things to right themselves is quite helpful. Most shamanic healing falls into this category. It is mostly about opening communication between their personality and the essence so they can work things out. Shamanic healing aims to clear out the stuck energy, the blocks, the traumas, the negativity, so the choice for healing can happen. Now, if we are evolving in consciousness as a species, then why is it that so many people are acting so badly around the planet at this time? Now, I myself felt that was an excellent question to ask. Jose says, most of you know by now, and most of my listening audience knows by now, that the planet is currently undergoing a highly changing, shifting, moving from the child or young soul state of consciousness to the adolescent, young adult, or mature soul state of consciousness. Okay? This process parallels the transition each human undergoes from age 11 to 14. Puberty, except on a mass scale never before seen on this planet. Now think about it. Think about it as he goes on to say, puberty is a notoriously challenging rite of passage involving hormones, physical, psychological, and emotional growth, and a total transformation into a different kind of being. The same is true for this shift on the planetary scale. As you all know, the shift is often not pretty for young people, and many go through trials that put themselves and their families through hell and back. They often don't listen, act belligerent, believe they know it all, and behave in immensely selfish and self-absorbed ways. At other times, they are highly idealistic, depressed, anxious, or confused. Eventually, they often blossom into amazingly productive human beings that you would be privileged to know. Now, blow this up on a mass scale, and you can see what is all around at this time. This rough patch for the planet is being concentrated into a rather short time frame, perhaps only a couple of hundred years. If you are being myopic and hoping for immediate resolutions or solutions, you are going to be sadly disappointed. Think of a family where there is a child going through puberty, let's say with difficulty, and who has a couple of older brothers and sisters and a number of younger siblings. Now, let us say that the whole family is experiencing stress, extreme stress, because dad has lost his job and mom is going through menopause. Creditors are threatening to foreclose on the house and so on. Y'all get the idea? Because everything is so stressful, all the children are acting out, fighting and misbehaving. This causes the child going through puberty to have an even more difficult time. Normally, he or she would be receiving strong rites of passage from their elders, and they would navigate this time frame with powerful support from their family and the community. But in this case, that would have all disintegrated, and there would be no support and no acknowledgement of what they are going through on their own. So that child is left to fend for him or herself, trying to navigate the shoals of puberty alone. They become intensely angry, blame everyone, try to strike out on their own, and generally make a lot of errors in judgment. Often they blame themselves, experience self-hatred, and feel guilty for everything being such a mess. They feel they should be able to heal the family, but the job is simply too overwhelming, and they are ill-equipped to save the world, much less save themselves. Now, all the other children, although not going through puberty, are acting out as well. Instead of being happy campers, they are all expressing the worst sides of their personalities, kind of like the family trip where all the kids are fighting like cats and dogs in the back of the van while parents are fruitlessly trying to drive, yell, and whack the children this way and that without effect. Sounds like fun, huh? Maybe you remember this from your own childhood, or at least some of it. Well, this is the way it is on planet Earth now. Right now. Fortunately, it's not totally as bleak because there is a couple of mature older kids that keep to themselves and plan to help to maintain order and act as good, compassionate role models for the rest. They are highly stressed as well, but are able to somehow maintain their sanity because they have better perspectives than all the others. Now, here is something interesting to consider. Puberty does not have to be so difficult. There have been indigenous societies on this planet that have managed puberty very well. When a community is balanced and acts with harmony and wisdom, this filters down to all members of all the families, and they tend to behave rather well. The older ones take care of the younger ones. There's plenty of singing and dancing, and there is a general attitude of respect shown everywhere. People share work together, and minor difficulties can be managed with relative ease. This is the way it was meant to be. However, along the way, human beings made some serious errors in judgment. Authority was transferred to all-powerful governments who ruled selfishly and greedily. Authority was transferred to soulless corporations who worshiped the gods of profit above all else. Harmony, respect, and love were lost, and the world became highly divided, competitive, and filled with animosity. Human beings overpopulated their planet and shamelessly stripped the planet of resources, fouling the nest disastrously. Religious structures were allowed to denigrate the feminine, control the psyche, and eliminate freedom of being in the name of concentrated power. About every mistake that could be made was chosen as a course of action, and the results of those choices are forming the great lessons at present. All is not lost. Somebody might want to learn the hard way to experience this set of choices. Some teenagers choose this way of learning and still grow up. Like a very difficult sporting event where everything seems lost and gets turned around at the very end of the game, the celebration may be much bigger as a result. Perhaps this is what the human race, too, has in mind. Okay? So it's not all at loss, and there are many of us on the face of this earth who are coming together and joining ourselves, you know, and joining our forces, and not as an evil, malicious, horrible way. We're coming together like this retreat that I'm going to, where I'm going to experience every aspect of who I am. Rather than walking around being fragmented, where I can't be who I am totally with this particular person or that particular person, or I'm at my job and I can't be this way because, you know, I have to hide certain aspects of me. Sometimes you get tired of that stuff and you just want to be free. You just want to be the total sum of all that you are. And I don't care what anybody on the face of this earth says. There aren't very many occasions where you can be all that, even if you think that you can be all that. No, you're not. You're hiding something, some aspect of who you are from somebody. Even if you're like swearing like crazy, you don't do it when you're at a particular job that you work at. You got to contain yourself, and you cannot let it all hang out, okay? So, how does one avoid the fear that comes with the prospect of so many catastrophic prophecies about the times that we are living in? We know that there are so many prophecies out there about the coming of the end times and the end of the world, and you have, you know, your religious books that tell you that in the end times this and this is what's going to happen, and Then there's revelations with Gog and Magog, and some people are wondering if that's the United States and Russia coming to war with one another. Well, the shamanic point of view is, believe it or not, a fair response is a choice. You can choose not to follow the thinking track that leads to fearfulness. A mind running amok is an unpleasant and dangerous thing. So you have to take responsibility for what you do with it. Perspective is a very helpful thing. First of all, when I check in with spirit about things that concern me, the answer is never, boy, are you screwed. Have you ever received that reply in your talks with your creator? I don't think so. If you say that spirit never answers you, it is probably that you have been doing all the talking and no listening. Remember what we said? Prayer is talking. Meditation is listening. There is a bigger picture to life on this planet, and what happens is not random. Nothing happens by chance. There is no point to total destruction of the planet. That does not fit what all the great saints and spiritual masters have said over the millennia. Harsh events are reminders about how not to live. They simply mean we have forgotten how to live correctly and are being nudged back on track. Nature is not vengeful and has no interest in our suffering. We do just fine with that all by ourselves. Nature is actually quite benevolent and kind when we learn to live appropriately with her, because she follows certain basic guidelines that can be understood. If you build in a floodplain, you will probably eventually drown. If you build flimsy buildings in an earthquake zone, you're going to get hurt or die. We are rapidly approaching a nexus point where a swarm of possibilities come together. These are periodic and offer a great many choices based on many parallel realities. The human race has some important decisions to make about which parallels to activate, and not all parallels carry disaster as their scenario. Furthermore, it is important not to be too concrete in your thinking. Life on Earth is almost totally symbolic when you look closely. It is theater, and it is meant to both entertain and instruct. Some people like horror movies, some like thrillers, and some like love stories. Tell me, what do you like? Because that is what you are programming the quantum field to deliver. Everyone will get what they ask for. Not to worry, because in the big picture, it's all good and it all turns out just fine. Remember that in the bigger picture, these symbolic bodies just don't last anymore. So watch your symbols and learn to understand them. If you don't like the symbols, then trade them in for new ones. Jose says he personally doesn't like the symbols of catastrophe. He personally does not like the symbols of catastrophe, so he doesn't think he will opt for that one. But if that's the one you choose, then that's the one you choose. Then you go at it. Now, there are a lot of you out there that want to know about indigos and indigo children and ascension. Some of you have heard of ascension. So what is ascension? When people speak of ascension these days, they are mostly referring to the process of waking up from being sound asleep and believing in the low-frequency dream of this so-called reality. Ascending is to reach for a higher amplitude, more light, an open heart, and thus become a vehicle for that quote-unquote Christ energy that is now becoming more and more available. Now, a lot of us, when we say Christ energy, we look to the Bible, and there are a lot of Christians that are waiting for the body Christ to return and that kind of thing. And I don't intend to cast any aspersions to that. But I was taught that the Bible is a book of allegory, okay, symbols. Symbolic terms. And when you say the body Christ, the Bible may not necessarily be talking about the physical body of a human being, you know, embodied with God's essence to be walking the face of this earth. The body Christ could be a body or a group of all of us coming together preaching the goodness that that individual spoke back in the day when that individual was walking the face of this earth. A lot of times, you know, people say that Jesus is the Son of God, that's S-O-N. But then there are others who believe that, yes, Jesus was the Son of God, but he was the S-U-N of God, that light that shone over vast areas of life and living. So any way you want to look at it, that energy is present on the face of this earth. But Jesus' energy isn't the only energy that's present on the face of this earth. So is Muhammad's energy, sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So is Buddha's energy. So are all the prophets that came before all of these individuals. That energy is dominant on the face of this earth. So if you believe in any of these aspects of the Creator, in your belief system, then know that all is not lost, because all aspects of the Creator are on the face of this earth. And we have no intentions of losing now, do we? Question, please explain what and who the Indigo children are. Well, Indigo children, according to this shaman, are old souls who have recently been born and who are strong, psychic, have strong psychic and other capabilities. So you have an influx of these old souls incarnating in newborns now and teenagers now. If you look at some of your 20-year-olds, these were considered the indigos way back when. Well, the 20-year-olds, the ones who are 20, 21, 25, they're rising. They're coming forth, and they're going to start with changing the 2018 election, because now they're able to vote. They didn't know what they were here for or were confused at one time, but they're no longer confused. As a matter of fact, indigos were first, you saw your first indigo, if you're not familiar with indigos, when Barack Obama became president of the United States of America. Barack Obama was an indigo. He came here to implement a change for energy on the face of this earth. And what's happening now is that the forces that be didn't like that change, didn't like that energy, and they're trying to overturn it. But it's here to stay. And you have your young people coming up today because they are here to keep it. So let's go ahead and explain a little bit about these people that are called indigos. There is much attention on this new generation of children who show special abilities, but there is little agreement about who they are or how they behave. Okay, a lot of times they want to say that they're the ADHD, they're the children who are autistic, and so on and so forth. But many parents feel their children are special and want them to be part of a unique and special group, especially parents of children who have behavioral problems. And this way they can feel better about the fact that the children they have been given to raise is you know, they're difficult. This often points to the activity of ego in the parents and their wishes for self-importance or specialness, and this accounts for some of the interest in what are called indigo children. Okay? Nevertheless, there are many children being born who do show special aptitudes and abilities. These are nothing more than older souls who have agreed to be born at this time to help with the transition of the planet from young soul to mature soul in this 25-year period. Older souls always demonstrate more abilities even as young children, and they always have. If you could look into the past, you would find many incidents of children with these special abilities. Incidentally, older souls' children are usually advanced, kind, generous, loving, and not behavior problems. They usually show a lot of wisdom at a young age. There is no need to create the drama around them that they are extraterrestrial or that they are aliens or from some special galaxy far away. In fact, this does them a grave disservice. Imagine being labeled an extraterrestrial. They are part of the 100 billion people who are incarnating on the earth at this time. However, they are from the group with more experience. Almost 7 billion of the 100 billion are currently incarnate. Most, at any given time, are waiting in the wings for their next incarnation. Okay? So you have a whole group of indigos, these old souls that are ready to stand up and take charge. And it's fascinating to watch them. Look at the high school students that rallied around saving them their lives from guns. Look at the hundreds of students coming up and talking about how to change things by your vote. And there's one, I think her name is Yahara Shahidi. She's on the show Blackish. This young woman, she's organizing a group, 18 for 18. This is like you're going to be 18 years old in 2018. Get out the vote. These kids are fascinating, and they're getting ready to do the job that they were sent here to do. So let's talk about when does the essence enter the body. Does it enter the body at conception or at birth? That's an interesting question. And this shaman has an interesting answer. Once again, the views expressed tonight are not necessarily the views of Duchess. This is what the shaman says, and you don't have to believe this because the shaman is not your doctor, and the shaman is not your religious person or your religious leader. This is the shaman's view. As with all things human, this varies. Okay, Jose. The essence never enters at conception because the newly conceived body is just too boring and primitive for the essence to be interested in being in it. I can see that. The expansive essence is guiding the process of development, like a cook preparing a meal, watching the temperature, adding ingredients, etc. But the cook is not in the cake or in the vegetables cooking on stove. In fact, the body is not developed enough to host the essence until the third trimester. So sometimes the essence begins to enter partially at 6 months, but even then, being in a womb is rather dull. Most of the time, essence fully enters the body at the first breath at birth. Even then, sometimes the essence does not occupy the body, and if it does not within a couple of days, the infant will suffer crib death because a body cannot live outside the womb without an essence in it. Older souls can experience a great deal of frustration when occupying a body after birth because life as an infant can be so boring and limiting. The essence is ready to take on the world, but mostly it is just a big round of nursing, pooping, and peeing. They sleep a lot to relieve the boredom and frustration at not being able to control their movements. With greater mastery over the body, they are happier and more content. Some people think that old souls make good babies, but often they don't. Yogananda reported that he screamed during the first 6 months of his life. Imagine the frustration of that great soul stuck in a helpless infant's body. Much of the craziness around pro-life and pro-law between much of the craziness about pro-life and pro-choice could be resolved if only people understood the true dynamics of when the essence enters the body. Should fetuses be considered human beings? Well, that is a tough question because people have so many emotions about fetuses. You could say it is a loaded question. Of course fetuses are human because they are newly minted simians. That is what a human is. The question really is, are they human beings? Is there a spirit in there? Many pregnancies are merely a rehearsal for the real thing. That is why some pregnancies are not viable. The essence is practicing getting the body right. This is especially the case when the essence has not been in a body in a long time, more than 200 years. Essences do change their minds. Sometimes they begin the process and then realize that because of many choices being made by others, the timing is not optimal, and so they will terminate the pregnancy to wait for better conditions. People act as if bodies are what is important, but they are not vehicles for essence. Let me restate that because I did say that wrong. People act as if bodies are what is important, but they are only vehicles for essence. If there is no essence attached, then the body is purely an animal body and nothing more. Sometimes a woman is so attached to having a body and wants to use her creative energy so badly that she gets pregnant, but has made no arrangements or agreements with an essence to occupy that body. This is often the case with younger souls that don't exactly know what they are doing. In these cases, the fetus will not come to term, or even if it does, the infant will not survive more than a few days after birth. The truth is that there are more than enough bodies to go around. If an essence wants to get onto the planet, it will, no matter what. The essence intends to be born, it will be born. That's an interesting fact because you know how many times you see somebody, they get pregnant, and they have an abortion. And then a couple of months later, they're pregnant again. Well, doesn't that tell you something? That there was an essence waiting for that body, and they aborted that body, and essence said, I'm coming through anyway, so you just have to get pregnant again. That's interesting. What is needed is the discernment to determine the difference between a body and a body with an essence attached to it. This requires some sophistication. Younger souls don't have that sophistication. So, how to prepare for the changes ahead? Do you want to prepare for the changes ahead? This is an excellent question. The best possible thing you can do is to remember as often as possible that you are dreaming and inventing this thing called your reality. At first, this won't seem to mean much, but with practice, you will begin to gain much insight about the ramifications of this. If you are the dreamer, then you are also the dreamed and the process of dreaming. Do not make the error of thinking that it is your surface personality, the tip of the iceberg, that is doing all of this. It is the main body of the iceberg, your psyche, that handles this process. Knowing this, however, puts you into the power seat, the one who can actually do something about the dream. Make it a point, then, to dream actively. What is the world you want for your children? How would it be if you waved your Harry Potter's wand to be the world of your dreams? This begins the process like those first few snowflakes that start an avalanche moving. Dream this dream often, and like Gandhi's famous phrase, you become the change you want to see. So, what have we got here? Well, here's a question I'd like to entertain. I'm wondering whether Jose would be kind enough to expand on blessing. I like that. Here's some brief thoughts about the matter. Blessing from the ego or personality alone is not effective, since there is no power there, just arrogance and self-importance. When you bless, you are coming from that space of being spirit. In order to do so successfully, you need to experience that you are blessed by spirit and therefore are simply extending these blessings beyond you to others. In other words, doing the work of spirit. I used to say all the time, you know, to my creator, please reveal yourself to me and through me, that I may be a shining example of your divine light in human form. Therefore, it is difficult for people to experience that they can bless others if they are not in touch with being blessed. So to be in touch with being blessed, you have to ask for that touching. This is a major stumbling block for many people. If they are carrying around a burden of guilt, they themselves have extricated themselves from spirit's blessings, feeling they do not deserve to be blessed. How can they then bless others feeling this way? It is not that they can't. It is really that they won't, because they insist on seeing themselves as guilty. So if you want to go around extending blessings to others, you have to be the blessing that you want to share and extend to others. If you don't have that, then how can you extend this outwardly? Let's talk a little bit about addictions. So many people are addicted to a variety of things. What is addiction all about, and what can be done about it? This is a big topic and warrants a longer article, but here we'll deal with the core issue. Up to 80% of Americans are addicted to something. Methamphetamines and other drugs, alcohol, tobacco, food, caffeine, shopping, sex, gambling, and the internet. Technically, addiction influences brain function, specifically the action of dopamine involved in the chemical pleasure towards system going to dopamine involved in the chemical pleasure reward system gone out of whack. Anyone can become addicted to something if they are exposed to enough of a stimulus, response, routine. However, many people simply stay away from that compulsive stimulus response because other things have more interest or meaning for them. The most effective alternative is a spiritual path. Thus, we can say that people allow themselves to become seriously addicted because, A, they want to feel better than they do, B, as a self-medication for depression, disillusionment, anxiety, and so on in an insane culture, and C, as a desire to experience something more intense and exciting than their ordinary experience that seems dull or, again, meaningless to them. Once an addiction builds up, it can be totally irrational and difficult to handle and eradicate. All addictions are a form of spiritual crisis. In every case, it is the false personality or ego that has taken over control of the personality in order to subjugate the person and keep them from being free to find spirit. The paradox is often the quest for spirit is derailed into an addiction. God is what the person really wants, although they often don't know it, and the hopelessness of a life stuck in a body under the illusion of separation is so odious that the person will do anything to numb the pain. Wow. The search for God in a bottle or a pill just gets the person further and further away from what they are truly seeking. In short, run treatment programs no shorter than 90 days seem to help people the most in breaking their addiction. The people who stay involved in some form of treatment for years appear to do the best. Ultimately, the only real solution is to recognize that life in a body is an illusion and that what one really is spirit. We are spiritual beings having human experiences. We are aspects of our Creator in human form. So finding religion can be temporary and helpful, but religions fail to actually free people to find spirit, so they fail in the long run. Only truly awakening to who one is can truly cure an addiction. This is why the people who have the most success in resolving their addictions are old souls. More often, younger souls just don't have enough awareness to break the cycle, and the addiction leads to their death. Now, I want to go back and reiterate. When he says finding religion can be a temporary help, but religions fail to actually free people to find spirit, so they fail in the long run. I think what he's saying basically is that religions treat that your Creator is outside there, outside of who you are. you're praying to something that is separate from you. Whereas when you find spirituality, you come to believe that God is an aspect of who you are in human form. So God is not out there and separate from you. God is in here, and God is you in human form. So once you lock that in, you know better. You know better than to treat ego, allow ego to treat you with falsehood. Because it's the ego easing God out that causes many a downfall of people. All right? And so I guess what he's saying is church is good, religion is good for those who can hang in there as far as church is concerned. But sometimes church is not enough. Why? Because church teaches you that God is separate from you. God is up there in the sky. God is outside of you. You got to get on your knees and pray to God, you know, whereas spirituality gives you that sense of knowing that God is an aspect of who you are. And your Jesus Christ is no different from, you're no different from Jesus Christ because he was an aspect of God in human form, and so are you. So sometimes there is a difference. With that, it is 6:01. I'm getting hot and I'm getting excited here. I like the Shaman Speaks. We talked about addictions. We could go into why are we so tired. Well, the energy is up. The energy is high, you know. So what we got to do, I find that I can't sleep at night. And if you find that you can't sleep at night, then get up. Don't lay there in your bed trying to sleep. If you're not going to sleep, get up. Don't pick up a book and read it until you go. No, get up. Let your mind and your body know that bed is for sleeping, and if you're not going to sleep, you're not going to lay here, you know. I think what my body has done after my surgery, I spent so much time sleeping in a reclining position on my couch that my body thinks that that's the way I'm supposed to go to sleep, because that's what I find myself doing now. I never fell asleep on my couch. I would come in, watch TV, do the Daily Show with Trevor Noah, 11 o'clock, turn off the TV, get my butt in the bed, and go to sleep. Now I'm sitting there watching Trevor Noah, and right in the middle of it, I fall asleep on the couch, and I get up, and I carry myself to my bed, and I try to go to bed and go to sleep, and I don't go to sleep. So I get back up, 1 o'clock in the morning, go back to the living room, sitting there watching TV, you know, and then I find myself, I'm falling asleep. But that's neither here nor there. This is Duchess speaking to you. And once again, I'll be in California next month, the first Sunday. That's where I'll be. That'll be the 2nd, I believe, the 2nd of September, something like that. And I'm going to miss you, but when I come back, I'll have a lot to say and a lot to share with you. And like I said at the beginning of the show, this adventure that I'm going on is an adventure where it dawned on me today that every aspect of me can be felt to fruition, because I will be able to be all of who I am, and no longer will I be fragmented, at least for the week that I'm away. And that's a good thing. That's a good feeling. So before I lose my voice, I'm going to say goodnight. I'm going to say I love everyone. I'm going to say stay blessed. And until next time, this is Duchess. And I am signing out. Mwah. Assalamu alaikum. Take care. I go. Talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you.